that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. What it do?
Michelle, you know, I'm in Portugal. Really? I'm very happy. Yes, I'm very happy. It's a mellow Portugal type thing.
It's a mellow thing. Oh.
More enthusiasm. It's a mellow thing. I'm happy here, man. I might not come home. You have to send Interpol for me. I'm in Portugal.
Oh, Lord. I am not sending Interpol for you. So, where to begin? We have so many things to discuss today. And I feel like I don't know where to begin, but I'm going to start with music because it's the pop culture section. Let's start with one of our favorite 90s R&B singers, Ginuwine. Ginuwine is apparently strapped for cash. I mean, is that what the situation is? I'm not sure. Because he's on Celebrity Big Brother UK, not US. Is there even a Celebrity Big Brother US? I don't know. But he's on Celebrity Big Brother UK. Because I guess he was big here too. No idea. And there was a bit of a controversy because there is one of his housemates, India Willoughby, is a trans woman. And Ginuwine was asked, you know, if he would date a trans woman. And Ginuwine was like, nah. You know, I'm only into women, basically. And then Willoughby attempted to plant a kiss on the singer. And Ginuwine didn't like that, didn't respond to the advance, rejected it, left. And now some of Twitter is calling Ginuwine transphobic because of it, while others are saying, you can't like come for Harvey Weinstein and then come for Ginuwine too. So what do you think?
No.
Is it transphobic because Ginuwine didn't want to kiss her?
First of all, let's separate him saying, I would never date a trans woman from him rejecting an unsolicited kiss. Okay, let's separate those two issues because they're two different issues. Uh-huh. Let's start with the unsolicited kiss. Black men are seen as always fair game for white women. I hate to put on this hotep hat. I don't normally do it. I don't normally do it, but I'm going to go there right now. The fetishization is very deep. There's an entitlement to Black bodies that a lot of white folks have. And so what that means is that they do not ask for our consent to do things like touch our hair, kiss our bodies, hug our bodies, you name it. So here you have a situation where a woman has attempted to kiss a man without his consent, point blank, that's a problem. Uh-huh. That's a problem. And it seems like she was directed to do it to instigate a response. And I think that his response was actually the appropriate response. He didn't want it. He made sure he didn't have it. He didn't have any kind of gay panic about it. And he, you know what I mean? He left the area. He was just like, look, I've just been, you know, someone has just sexually harassed me. Uh-huh. And I'm out. Seems very appropriate, first of all. So if you're going to sexually harass people, whether you're trans, whether it's in a gay context, whether it's in a straight context, whether it's a woman or a man or a woman, or whatever genders you are putting on some other gender, it doesn't matter. Uh-huh. If you are trying to give someone something without their consent, that is a problem. So the situation that they put Ginuwine in was a trap. I'm just going to be clear about that. That was a trap. Now, him saying, I would never date anyone who is trans is problematic. Right? It's problematic for a lot of reasons. I think it's problematic because we know that our preferences are not apolitical, right? Our preferences are informed by politics. So if I say, well, I only date white people, or I only date light-skinned people.
But what's the difference? What's the difference? Let's take it a different way, right? What mm-hmm. if there is a woman who identifies as femme, mm-hmm. who says, who's a lesbian, who says, mm-hmm. I don't date other femmes. I only date butches or studs. What's the difference?
Yeah. And that happens often, right? Like, I've heard that many, many times.
Shed a tear.
All of our preferences are informed by our political beliefs. this idea that they can be sacred places in our lives where politics don't go is a misnomer. It doesn't happen. There are none of these places. Our politics and our values, right? Mm-hmm. Our values are expressed through our political beliefs. And those are then expressed as our preferences, how we live our lives, what we do. That's how that happens. So preferences are inherently going to be loaded with political beliefs and can be problematic. When I was in Seattle, we had something called the Fem Show, because there was a lot of anti-fem sentiment in the queer community there, in the sense that there almost was a seeming compulsion that when you came out, if your natural gender expression as was femmy, that you kind of, as a woman, that you had to butch up. And I love butches. And I love all gender expressions. And I can see sexiness in all of those gender expressions. The issue then became for me as a naturally femmy person who generally reads as femme is, you're never read as queer or queer enough, or you're interloping, and we just weren't feeling inclusion, let's say. And so the Fem Show was something to just highlight femme identities in all genders, right? And try to celebrate that identity, because it felt like within the general community, it was a kind of marginalized identity within a marginalized community. That was a problem. So yeah, what you were just mentioning, your hypothetical, is also problematic. And it's something that I've adjusted in the work that I've done in the past. But all of our preferences are
problematic. But problematic is something different than going all the way to calling someone phobic.
Transphobic.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
here's the thing. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. I think it's also, it doesn't do trans people or anybody any service by trying to talk about their equality on par with, would you have sex with them or would you date them? Because those are not the same thing.
No, they're not.
We know a lot exclusively want to be romantic with Black people that are racist AF, right? Like they are hella racist. And, you know, if they had it their way, all their partners would be chocolate, black, blackity black. That's how they want to date the Black Panther cast. And then meanwhile, super racist.
Right.
Super racist.
I feel like some of this backlash, if you want to call it that, was due to Nipsey Hussle, who is a rapper that I had never heard of. So I guess I'm out of the loop. Or maybe his music just is irrelevant.
Is this,
I'm not sure.
For him, it's like, is you going to create music or are you just going to come out with transphobia?
No. So, you okay, know, so Nipsey Hussle is an American rapper. He captioned an Instagram post, quote, "Demonstration speaks louder than conversation. They gon' feed us every image of our men and boys but this one. No hyperviolent, no homosexual, no abandoners, just strong Black men and young men. Respect to my big homie, yada, yada, yada," end quote. So obviously...
Hold on 1 second. Explain the image. What did the image look like?
Can I?
That he
put... Can
oh,
I?
Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, I'm busting up flows. Okay, go ahead.
So the image, since I got the question, the image is a room full of Black men, children, and young boys, right? That is the image. They're in tuxedos, most of them, all dressed really nicely. It doesn't matter what the occasion was. That's how Nipsey Hussle chose to caption the Instagram post. Obviously, this received a lot of negative feedback. He did receive something like over 48,000 likes on his Instagram post, but he has about 1.5 million followers. Obviously, there were some loud people, including DeRay Meckeson, who we know from the movement for Black Lives. He responded in a tweet, quote, "I've never thought that gay Black men were overrepresented in the media, but the original point is that gay is not a bad thing, not synonymous with violent, abandoner, and not the opposite of strong," end quote. You know, Nipsey felt the need to reply to that, bringing up this ubiquitous gay agenda that I just haven't read the book on it. I wish Is there a book that I can read about this gay agenda that everyone is so convinced about? Because I haven't read it. But Nipsey said he is clued in and very well informed, contrary to his appearance. And he knows about that gay agenda, right? So, but more importantly was the response of rapper and president of the record label Top Dog Entertainment, which is where Nipsey is signed. Guess who else is signed there? Kendrick Lamar.
Wow.
Punch decided he would respond on Twitter. Okay. And tweeted, quote, "It's crazy, out of everything positive Nipsey Hussle said in that IG post, people chose to focus on the one part that they deem as being homophobic," end quote.
Wow.
Punch is quite influential, obviously. And that was his response. So there you have it. 32-year-old rapper Nipsey in these
lots
streets. Super ignorant, talking about agendas. And we had just had that. And then this Genuine thing happened. And I think that Black gay Twitter wasn't here for it.
Of course not. I mean, come on, Nipsey. I mean, the ignorance of Uncle Nobody hip hop star is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
What you gonna do with it?
But I think
you could have said
different.
All this. The thing is he could have said all these positive things without including gays in this group of miscreants that he has.
First of all, in a room that size, statistics tells me that his post,
yeah, I can tell you some of them
is off. Okay,
listen.
Let me tell you.
Listen,
the room was too big. The room was too big for there not to be.
If it was two people that he knew personally and intimately, maybe. But like, you got a room of 30 folk. It's going to be some gayness. It's going to be some queerness. We don't even know if all those people were assigned male as birth.
Exactly.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We're not doing groin checks. Like, come on.
Like,
calm down.
It's absurd. But I do think there's a difference between what Nipsey said and what played out on Celebrity Big Brother. And I think that we can't conflate our anger. Because the reason I'm saying that is some people on Twitter did do that. They said, you know, first Nipsey and now Genuine. And then, of course, it always goes back to the Black community being so homophobic and transphobic. And I'm over it.
So I've talked a lot about the lack of nuance in our modern age, right?
Because
I've been told by a friend who's here with me in Portugal that I'm a little bit old school and a little bit of new school.
Agreed.
So, sort of old, sort of young, you know, on the verge of something.
Yeah.
And you feel mostly the sort of old. I know you do. Stop it. Whatever, young blood. All I'm saying is that when we're looking for, you know, transphobia to a certain extent, I think that when we try to get into the Matt Damon school of nuance, where we're saying, well, not all sexual, right? Like, not all sexual harassment is rape and assault. And so maybe we should slow our roll on, you know, aggressive flirtations and just focus on assaults and stuff like that. I think what he didn't understand, what a lot of people don't understand when they're splitting hairs between Genuine's comment and Nipsey Russell's comment, is both of them, to whatever degree, contribute to an atmosphere that makes trans people less safe.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them. Both of those comments. I ain't never gonna date a trans person. Of course, implication being what we've heard so much during a Def Comedy Jam, right? That like trans people, trans women in particular, are out here tricking people, luring them into sexual situations unwittingly, and tricking them into some sort of what they would consider a gay sexual relationship, because the premise is that trans women are really men in disguise, right? So all of that contributes to an environment where trans women of color have the highest rates of being murdered of any other population. That's a problem. That's a huge problem. So they're dangerous. These words have power, and it's dangerous.
Words do have power, as we learned on Sunday. Sunday. As our listeners probably have figured out by now, I love award season. And award season for me personally kicks off for real for reals with the Golden Globes. And the Golden Globe Awards 2018 took place on Sunday. And everybody was, you know, hype about what was to come because of Time's Up Now, the women in solidarity dressing all in black. We had Tracee Ellis Ross with the do up and the black power fist on the red carpet. We had many wonderful women invited as dates guests to accompany some of the stars. Tarana Burke was a guest of Michelle Williams. We had the founder of MCON, which is an organization here that supports specifically organizations who are helping women on the front lines, black and brown women who are victims and survivors of violence. She was Emma Watson's date, and so on and so forth. So we had like a lot of interesting things to happen, including Oprah Winfrey giving the speech of her life as she accepted the award, the Lifetime Achievement Award, the first black woman to accept that award. Denzel Washington accepted it 2 years ago, 2016. I think he was the second black man to accept it, Sidney Poitier being the first, as we learned in Oprah Winfrey's speech. We had Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he is This Is Us.
He is
Can This we just
Is
say
Us.
This? He is the whole show.
Sterling K. Brown is nominated in the category Best Performance by an Actor in a Television Series Drama. If you haven't watched This Is Us, get to it. You will, and make sure you have your hanky next to you. And Sterling K. Brown.
It's on Amazon. I gotta give people tips. Come on, it's on Amazon.
It is on Amazon.
Tell them.
Sterling K. Brown gave a speech in under 90 seconds, and it was an amazing speech about representation and being seen and visibility. Words are powerful. However, the left, I'm real confused about what's going on with the left right now. The left was mad that activists had been invited as guests because that's just for show. The left, like Oprah couldn't even have her moment. Just a moment. That's all she was asking for. Just a moment. Couldn't have her moment without being torn down. Mostly, not only, but mostly by a whole bunch of black left-leaning academics and intellectuals on Twitter who were tearing apart her viability as a candidate for the Oval Office. She hasn't launched a campaign. She hasn't said
as a matter of fact, she said emphatically on the Today Show when Gail, her best friend, asked her, are you running? Everyone wants to know. And she was like, absolutely not. She said that when she was launching her.
Because Gail is not on the Today Show.
Oh, I'm sorry. What show is she on? I'm sorry. Network television confuses me. That show that she hosts. She was on the show. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, everybody. She was on the show that Gail hosts, launching her book about Super Soul Sundays. And Gail asked her directly, and she said, absolutely. Come on, you know.
Gail was in Olivia Pope mode on Monday on CBS, as well as when TMZ asked her while she was going to the car after she had already said thing on CBS, because Stedman, who rarely speaks, misunderstood, according to Gail, what a journalist was asking him. And he understood was that the journalist asked him, would Oprah make an amazing president? And of course, what is Stedman going to say? She absolutely would.
Right.
The journalist claims that they asked, would she run for president?
Run. Okay. So that's totally different questions.
Two different questions. So Gail was in Olivia Pope mode on Monday explaining to people that she's intrigued by it. She's not actively looking to run. But nope, the left is here tearing everybody down. So explain to me, what's wrong with Tarana Burke getting a little fame? She's been in this game for 10 years with her Me Too movement. She's been in it for 10 years. You have to seize the moment. The moment is now. The awareness is there. The money is flowing. What is wrong with her having a moment and being on the red carpet, looking beautiful as Michelle Williams' date? Michelle Williams, who wouldn't even talk about her own nomination.
Right.
Kept bringing it back.
To Me Too. Okay, so we're in a moment where there's so many receipts, especially on celebrities, right? Because they're living their whole lives in the public eye, that you could go back to that moment in 1992 when they did some whack stuff. Meryl Streep, who is a forerunner in the Me Too or in the Time's Up, let's say, movement, not Me Too, but in the Time's Up movement, like part of this coalition of 300 women in Hollywood that are trying to put a stop to sexual harassment on screen. She is famous. And I will always remember when she was being critiqued for diversity in her films, and she said,
"Please don't."
Yes,
we've talked about it.
Let me try to make a point. But I'm trying to make a point.
Okay.
So she said, "You know, I'm African. We're all African. So, you know, what does diversity matter? Basically, essentially, right? Like, I'm paraphrasing here, but she was trying to do that thing that white people do, that like, you know, race is not a thing because, you know, we're all from Africa, aren't we? Did that thing, which is a common derailment tool for trying to support non-equitable situations. So
in the same year, went to church when Patricia Arquette was on the stage and said, "You black people, we're done with you. We've done our part for you. Now you need to get behind us, women, because there are no black women. You need to get behind us for this pay equality." And Meryl Streep was up in church, amens, and standing ovations. In the same year.
So white feminists in particular, or trademark white feminists, like that, Patricia Arquette, Meryl Streep, are going to have a checkered past. And in the age of receipts, what that means is that no one is really going to pass a purity test.
No, I'm sure we won't.
No one's going to pass a purity test. And if you look into some of these, you know, activists, the reason that they pass purity tests is because you don't know anything about them like that. You don't know everything about them. I mean, I had some head-ass ideas when I was younger. Everyone did, you know, and we evolve out of them. And we don't always make public apologies for false things that we did in the public. We don't always, you know, we don't have PR machines, all of us. Mm-hmm. So if we don't allow for a good thing just to be a good thing, then these social justice activists are accessories. Do you know what it means for Tawana Burke to be able to now? Right. And this is a new thing for her to be able to, in this moment, call a brunch or a luncheon of highly influential women and their checkbooks. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means for her to now conceptualize a project and have that funded in under 24 hours? That's like, I've worked in a nonprofit. That is like gold. Connections, relationships are like gold. I have a lot of feelings about the fact that now in this moment also, we're in a situation where nonprofits and charity are essentially taking on roles of social justice. That's another argument.
Yeah, sure.
But for a social justice activist to have those levels of connections is essential. It's like a lifeblood.
So why do we need someone like Seal? Black man who married Heidi Klum and had a bunch of babies and then divorced. Why do we need someone like Seal to then come sideways at Oprah on Instagram and repost some pictures of her, you know, chumming it up with Harvey Weinstein and saying that how can she possibly be for Time's Up now if she was friends with Harvey? Okay, so Seal, how about you post some pictures of all the other people?
Is Donald Trump with him? I mean, like, come on. It's like,
that's all I'm saying. Like, why is it more important in those moments to dig up some old picture? Oprah hasn't denied that. Meryl Streep hasn't denied that.
Of course. But no one's going to pass the purity test. And I think what we need to understand on the left, I mean, people bring up great points and they have a debate about it, but there's sometimes a tone in how they call people out that is very much about disposing people, right? So XYZ person did some things and it was problematic or it was oppressive in some way, and no one's disputing it. Mm-hmm. But do we then take them and dispose of them? We got a problematic president and ain't nobody disposing of him.
No.
I mean, let's be real. Let's be real. I mean, like, forget problematic, straight up racist. Straight up.
All
like,
the things. Like, he real clear.
And nobody has disposed of him. But meanwhile, we got somebody who's at least attempting to get woke, attempting to make some strides, at least attempting to affect change in an area that affects them. Mm-hmm. And we can't even see a way to intersect with them on some things. And and that's how it works. I mean, in every movement, people come together with other people, not forever, but for a moment. And mm-hmm. there is that's a problem, and it will not be able to happen with purity tests. But I think that we can't listen to that. The majority of people thought it was super inspirational. Here's the problem I have with people now putting Oprah on the road to the presidency. And it's not the seal problem, because I'm gonna call him by his whole name. His whole name is Sunken Place Seal. And that's what it is. That's what it is, okay? So that's his whole name. And I ain't messing with him, because I didn't even know he had an Instagram or a house or a career. I didn't know. So anyway, I didn't know. You know, he could go kiss a rose. I don't know. All I'm saying is this. Every time a Black woman comes into the limelight in a way like an Oprah, right? And she is, you know, she's kind of like, yeah, Black luminary, who self-made billionaire, really great at capitalism, really great at business, really great at media entertainment industry, which she does. And I have a lot of respect for her. You know, her Super Soul Sundays be my church. I really do love Miss Oprah. But can we just not look at the success of Black women as a way to service us? Can we just let them have their lives? Mm-hmm. No one has turned to Bill Gates and said, well, Bill Gates, you have name recognition. You have all the money in the world. Run for freaking president. No one has do something for us. You be doing stuff for Africa. Do it for us.
Right.
No one has said that. Mm-hmm. We say that to Oprah all the time. You be creating schools in South Africa. Why don't you come here and run for president? Or why don't you clean up all of Chicago? Why don't you fix our lives, Liana? Why don't you, you know? And this it goes back to a history of looking at the role of Black women as the mammy, as the fixer, as the Olivia Pope to a certain extent, as the person who comes in and makes it all better for us. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. We already had a Black person that came in and fixed a lot and tried to fix it. He did everything supposedly, quote unquote, right. I mean, mm-hmm. I have a lot of critiques of that presidency.
Of course.
But
of any presidency, because that goes along with the job. If you want to stay loving somebody, don't have them become president. And I think I did see somebody write that, right? They were like, I don't want Oprah having to dispatch drones. I don't want Oprah having to. That's what happens when you're president. It is what it is. Like, whether you think that's the truth or not, I promise. I was disillusioned when I worked as a congressional fellow. It's why I'm not a politician today. There are choices you have to make if you want to make it in that field. I don't want Oprah to have to make them choices. I want Oprah, call her a neoliberal if you will. You said she was good at capitalism? Yes, she's good at capitalism. Absolutely. And I love that. This woman donated $10 million to the cleanup after Katrina. Let her keep making her money and using it like that. That's what I want her to do. Period. Moving on. It doesn't get better. Let me tell you.
It doesn't.
We're going downhill from here.
Wow. Yeah. We gotta go down the hill.
In our second segment. You know, I thought about avoiding this conversation this week, not reading the articles on it, but it was impossible. But I'm lucky. Let me tell you why. Because I've been boycotting them for longer than anybody else. H&M, people, the Swedish company that everybody loves because you can get you some $8 jeans. Guess what they decided to do? they had a photo shoot with a cute black boy and put him in a green hoodie that read, "Coolest monkey in the jungle." Now, some people might say, oh, I call my baby a monkey. They're little monkeys. They, you know, climb all over the furniture and they're cute and they're okay, maybe. Until you see the white little boy in an orange hoodie that says, "Survival expert." I do personally feel like I would have felt differently about this whole campaign if it would have just been the coolest monkey in the jungle. I would have said, because I do have friends who call their children monkeys because they're cute and they climb over the furniture and they won't be still. But no, this isn't in the home. This isn't your own child. This is H&M, one of the biggest retailers with stores across most of the world. And they didn't have one person who questioned this. People are boycotting, including The Weeknd. The Weeknd had the clearest words, in my opinion. The Weeknd and Diddy, of course. But, you know, it's Diddy. The Canadian singer The Weeknd announced on Twitter, quote, "Woke up this morning shocked and embarrassed by this photo. I'm deeply offended and will not be working with H&M anymore," end quote. Then Diddy had to get into the game and also put on a black artist named Curvin Andre, who goes by the pseudonym Comix Art. He redid the image, put the black boy with a crown over his head, and the image then read, "Coolest king in the world." But you know, there's a formerly Caucasian woman who thought she could do it better.
Ooh.
And her name is
She's Rachel. Just trolling at this point. She's just trolling.
And her name is Rachel Dolezal. And she says,
no, her name isn't. Her name is.
No, her name is Rachel Dolezal. It is still. That's what she still goes by on Instagram, which is where she posted an image claiming she spent all day. Let me tell you, though, if she spent all day just making this little bit of work, maybe graphic design is not what she's meant to do. So she created a green hoodie that reads "Coolest prince in the hood." Now, obviously, black people were like, hold up.
We're not all in the hood, boo-boo. I'm
Do you understand the connotation of the word hood? How are you better than H&M? Why we got to be in the hood? We all know what the hood means, right?
Yeah, stop it.
Online, a lot of people were like, the mother couldn't have known. This is impossible. Where was the mother when this happened? See, this is what they do to us. They get our kids. And then, blah, 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 blah. Mom, on the other hand, was like, quote, "M the mum. And this is one of hundreds of outfits my son has modeled. Stop crying wolf all the time. Unnecessary issue here. Get over it." End quote. She says she is at every photo shoot without exception. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, but this is not her way of thinking. Now, it's a hard divide because often, you know, in Europe, Black Americans get called out for not knowing enough about Black history in other parts of the world. Black Americans in the U.S. are trying to heed that advice and will often say, you know, we know that our history of racism is different from other histories of racism in Europe. That argument pisses me off. And I understand why Black Americans are using that now because, you know, they've been criticized for so long about not being informed. But the histories are shared. Anyone, Black or white, who is saying that the history of racism in the U.S. is unique to the U.S. is sipping on the white supremacy Kool-Aid and it's BS. So for all the people who think this mother coming from the UK, maybe sees things differently because of that. False. Racism is alive and well here. And if you don't believe me, you can read a book. It wasn't my favorite book, but it did get a lot of attention last year. Why I'm no longer talking to white people about race. She goes in on the specifics of racism in the UK. This woman is simply ignorant. I'm sorry, but it needs to be said. Mum or no mum, she's ignorant if she does not see the problem with this. Maybe she doesn't see the problem because she sees the paycheck. Maybe the paycheck was in front of the problem. I don't know. But this is a problem. What is your take on it?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe in 2000 years from now.
I'm kind of with Galdem. Did you read the Galdem article on it? Where they say, I'm tired about being outraged. I'm not outraged about this.
I'm not outraged.
The whole situation is just a symptom of the fact that HM does not have any diversity in decision-making roles, right? So this is a massive multinational company, and they're doing this marketing campaign, and they're having people of color, children of color in that campaign, but they don't even see the need to have someone with any level of political awareness or consciousness review any of these images.
Nothing, why is it political? It's not political.
Didn't I just tell you politics was in everything? Every degree. It's in the waters and who you sleep with. It's in everything. It's everywhere.
Galdem wasn't
definitely
unique
in
that
your marketing
argument.
Campaign.
Mm. Well, Galdem wasn't unique to that argument. Caliber, a big YouTube name, did like a 7-minute video saying basically the same thing. I'm over it. I'm not surprised. Why is this new? Why are you outraged? Are you going to put your money where your mouth is and support Black business instead? Black businesses, are you going to do better? I'm glad he did say that, because I get tired of people talking about support Black business. Look, I'm a Black business owner, and let me be clear. I like to support Black business. But if you're never on time, if you're rude, if you can't even open your mouth when I come through the door, if you don't want to help me, if you have no service, I don't want to support you. I don't care what color you are. So that being said, he did tell, you know, in his little video, he did say Black businesses do better. But my thing is, I mean, how many times does it need to happen? At this point, maybe it's just bad publicity. It's still publicity. We had Dove last year.
No,
we
I don't
had
think
Pepsi
I,
last year.
I don't
we
think had, H&M wanted this. I don't think they wanted this. I think that if they could have paid somebody $100K a year to avoid this and ever having it again, they would have gladly paid that chump change to somebody. Mm-hmm. But they just didn't even they don't even have the knowledge to know what they don't know.
Mm. I mean, some people try to claim because they're Swedish, they don't know. Again, stop giving Europeans the benefit of the doubt. Just stop. Stop it.
They're not all that Swedish. Come on now.
Stop it. H&M, yes. From Sweden originally. Do you think everyone making decisions
originally
are from Sweden? Give me a break. Mm. But why are we so willing to offer up these excuses all the time?
I mean, hey, the way that racism works most effectively is when it's invisible. So you have people that are agents of white supremacy that are very much invested in keeping racism invisible. So it doesn't even matter if you have a hooded KKK Klansman come to your house and burn it down, right? They will find some way around it. He had mental health issues. He wasn't loved as a child. He fell in with the wrong crowd. No, seriously.
They will.
Didn't think that that's how far they would go. But these are the kinds of things people said about even a Timothy McVeigh. These are things that people say about a Clive Bundy. Yeah, I mean, the whole way that racism works the most effectively is if we keep it as invisible as possible. And so no matter what egregious racist situation you are in, you will find people that say, are you sure? Maybe he meant it the right
way. Well, I can tell you, nobody in my barbershop thought that. And all those boys and men are from London, UK. Everybody was really clear about it. Everybody was really outraged by it. Everybody was deeply disappointed. Also because, like Kev on stage said, you know, H&M, when you got a lot of kids, that's the place to get your clothes from because they're cheap.
Right.
It's super cheap. I get that. You know, we all have to make ends meet. However, I did also hear in my barbershop the frustration that in these types of apologies, right? So H&M didn't apologize. They apologized for offense, not for actually creating the racist ad. And I keep going back to this because there are many Black personalities who go on television, go on morning shows every day and talk about offense.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we're talking about offense, those are the types of apologies we'll get. There's no prevention. There's no preemption. It's just an apology afterwards. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, you turn it into the individual incident instead of the system of oppression that it supports. Of course.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
I am doing a lot to prepare for Black History Month 2018. Uh-huh. I keep trying to impress upon people.
Do you have one in Vienna, or are you just using the U.S.'s?
Shut the hell up. Let me tell you something. Wherever Denise go, okay. February is where the blackness happens, okay? Okay.
Do you?
All right. Anyway, so yeah, I'm so excited about February, Black History Month. And so I'm with some amazing people here, and we're trying to cook up some things that can happen in February in Vienna for Black History Month. We're very excited about it. And so that's my main thing that I'm very excited about. I'm excited that Slick Rick got over whatever he got over and is coming to Vienna and performing. That's exciting.
Wow.
I know, right? He's coming through. And my very last thing that I'm excited for is I'm excited for the We Day Collective and the self-care POC and queer trans initiatives. They've been knocking it out the box with the events that they have been having. Ooh. So what are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
So many things. So Lena Waithe on Sunday, I didn't believe her. On Sunday, she put out a call. She said, repost this picture, tag me in it, and I will follow you back and comment. And it was the picture, it was an image promoting The Chi. Obviously, I did. And I was like, she's never going to be able to find everyone who does this. It's the Golden Globe. She's too busy. And of course, she didn't comment. She didn't do anything. And I was so upset. And then I realized, I went back and reread her post, and she did say tag her in the image itself. I only added her name, you know, her handle in the actual comment. So I tagged her in the image. What do you know? She commented and followed the Queer Truth back.
Okay, so when it am, like, I mean, so I just want to know, you know, I don't know. Like, I have a lot of thoughts on Lena. I have a lot of thoughts. Oh my gosh, just fangirling right now. But go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, Lena. We appreciate you.
She got us both dying. She got us both dying with a follow.
I know. Look,
I think we're done now. I think this podcast is done now. We can just retire. We're done. She follows us. And that's it.
That's like, all that matters.
I think we could just make all Lena related content from here on out. We'll see how that goes. I think it'll work out.
We love you, Lena. We love you. What else am I looking forward to? I'm looking forward to so much, but I'm going to actually save it because it's not here yet. But all I can say is stay tuned, listeners. It's going to be exciting. Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can and you have a little spare cash, please support us on patreon.com/thequeertruth. Until next time, peace out.